So many Americans grew up watching Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, or they have children or grandchildren who did. Today marks the 50th anniversary of the first national broadcast of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood on public television. He taped his last episode in 2001 and died a couple of years later at age 74. We're going to pay tribute to Fred Rogers today and listen back to an interview I recorded with him in 1984. That's a long time ago. But first, our TV critic David Bianculli has this appreciation.
It's a beautiful day in this neighborhood, a beautiful day for a neighbor. Would you be mine? Would you be mine?
50 years ago today, when Fred Rogers showed up on public television as the host of what then was a brand new children's show called Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, TV was a lot different. PBS wasn't even a network then, not by that name anyway. And aside from CBS, NBC, and ABC, there were only a few independent local channels to watch, if that. But 50 years ago, young kids were pretty much the same. I interviewed Fred Rogers a few times over the years, and one time I asked him about the secret of his success, why his slow, deliberate manner of relating to children and seeming to look at them and talk to them directly through the TV lens connected so strongly with young viewers. This is what he told me. "Every one of us longs to be in touch with honesty," he explained. "I think we're really attracted to people who will share some of their real self with us." Fred Rogers shared his real self with us from that very first day of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood on February 19, 1968, when he went national on public TV, removed his jacket and dress shoes, slipped on a sweater and sneakers, and talked gently about anything he wanted. The first thing he wanted to talk about on that first show, as he tied the laces of his tennis shoes, was tying the laces of his tennis shoes.
"How are you doing with your tying? Took me a long time to learn how to make that and that into a bow. Mm-hmm. But I kept practicing and practicing and practicing and finally learned quickly."
Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood was all about encouragement and support. It loved to educate kids a little, inspire them a lot, and, when necessary, calm them down a bit about what may be unspoken fears. That first week of Mr. Rogers was about change. Even in the neighborhood of make-believe, where a puppet ruler named King Friday the 13th was upset that his subjects were moving their homes around his kingdom. King Friday became so upset in this week-long story that he ordered a big wall to be built around the castle to keep everyone out. But eventually, in this make-believe story from 50 years ago, the ruler decided he had nothing to fear and took down the wall. That was a reassuring story then, and Fred Rogers had hundreds of them. He could calm little kids by telling them they were too big to slip down the bathtub drain. But he could also take to prime time, as he did in the summer of 1968, to have one of his most beloved hand puppet characters, Daniel Striped Tiger, asking for a definition of the word assassination. Robert F. Kennedy had just been shot and killed, and Fred Rogers thought even very little children would pick up on how upset the grown-ups around them were and deserved to be talked to and reassured a little. And at a time when, once again, politicians are talking about defunding public television, it should be noted that in 1969, Fred Rogers went to Washington to testify before Congress about why public TV was so important to young viewers and to beg for $20 million in public funding. Before the gruff committee chair, Senator John Pastore, Rogers described his show, sang a song, recited some poetry, and when Fred Rogers finished, the senator told him he'd earned the $20 million. 50 years later, the work and legacy of Fred Rogers has not been forgotten. The Fred Rogers Center, where I currently serve on the advisory board, continues to seek and support new approaches to education and entertainment in the Fred Rogers spirit. The TV company in his name continues to produce programs, including the animated Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood. You can still get box DVD sets of some of the Fred Rogers shows and specials, which ran on PBS until 2001, 2 years before his death. And in this golden anniversary year of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, there are many other plans afoot. Today, in his hometown of Latrobe, Pennsylvania, St. Vincent College is scheduled to host a screening of the very first Neighborhood episode, 50 years exactly after it premiered. Next week on the PBS Kids Network, other vintage episodes of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood will be paired with their cartoon Daniel Tiger equivalents. PBS will present a retrospective special salute in March. In June, a new film documentary, Morgan Neville's Won't You Be My Neighbor, is scheduled to be released in theaters nationwide. There's a major new book biography due in September, and the U.S. Post Office is issuing a Fred Rogers stamp. And it's just been announced that there's a movie in the works, with Fred Rogers set to be played by Tom Hanks. That's kind of perfect. One of the most loved children's hosts in TV history, played by one of the most loved actors in movie history. It's a lot of fuss, especially for a man who didn't like to draw attention to himself. But Fred Rogers deserves it. And today, our children's children still deserve and need Fred Rogers.
David Bianculli is the founder and editor of the website TV Worth Watching and is the author of The Platinum Age of Television. Here's the interview I recorded with Fred Rogers back in 1984 when Fresh Air was a local program in Philadelphia. At the time, Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood had been broadcast nationally for 16 years, but Rogers had already been working in children's television for 30 years. I asked him what he was like as a child.
I was an only child. I had to make up a lot of my friends myself, and I think that was the beginning of the whole neighborhood of make-believe. I had a very rich fantasy life.
What were the friends that you had imagined?
I didn't imagine them. I had puppets, and so I would play with the puppets. And I can't remember their exact forms, but I knew that they were important to me. I think that all of the puppets in the neighborhood of make-believe are facets of who I am.
Was there somebody in your life who was the kind of figure for you, like you've become to so many children, who would, you know, like reassure you and, you know, want to discuss things with you? Of course, you can't actually step out of the TV and discuss it with all the kids, but you offer that to them. Was there someone like that for you?
I guess the closest person was my grandfather, Mr. McFeely. And, of course, we've named the Speedy Delivery Man for him. We called him Ding Dong because he taught us that childhood rhyme, Ding Dong Bell, Pussy in the Well. And everybody called him Ding Dong. He was the kind of person who would really support your strivings for autonomy. And while my parents and my grandmother were naturally very concerned about my health and hazards around, he was the kind of person who, when I would walk on one of his stone walls, for instance, and they would say, "Better get down." Ding Dong would say, "Ah, let the kid walk on the wall. He's got to learn to do things for himself." And that's so helpful to know that there are limits, but there are people who would help you to stretch beyond some of those limits.
What were the things that really scared you when you were a child?
I think the most scary thing was being alone and thinking that maybe nobody would come to get me. And I think that school, beginning school, was tough for me. That's probably why I've done so much work for children in this area. I think also I was frightened of the doctor, and that's probably why I've made all those videotapes about helping children know about what hospitalization is like before they go. Probably why I wrote that song, I Like to Be Told, because I did. I liked to be told about things before I had to go do them.
Did you like scary movies or books?
I can't remember.
Did you go to the movies a lot?
I would go to the movies. It's hard for me to remember. I remember a couple movies that I liked Shirley Temple. And I liked those kinds of stories that, she would always come out okay at the end. And I met Shirley Temple Black not too long ago, and I just sat beside her in awe. And I said, it was interesting because the first thing I said to her was, you were one of my favorite people. She said, were. That was the first thing she said. And that really put me back. I expected her to say something about, I'm really glad that I could have been part of your childhood. But all she said was, were. I was one of your favorite people. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, it is. Did she diminish in your esteem after saying that?
A little bit. But I think that so many people you put on pedestals when you see them from afar. And it's probably just not fair to expect them to be as wonderful as you thought they would be when you met them.
What about when you were a teenager? Was that an uncomfortable experience, or did you feel like you fit in with everybody in high school, which is, I think, a pretty traumatic time for a lot of people when they're growing up?
It sure is. I think that teenage years are probably uncomfortable for everybody. It's just that some seem to be able to carry it off with more elan than others. But it was tough for me at the beginning. And then I made a couple friends who found out that the core of me was okay. And one of them was the president or the head of the football team. He later became my best friend in high school. But it was after the beginning of that friendship that I was more accepted in school. Then I became the editor of the yearbook and finally the president of the student council by the end of high school. But I was a very shy person going into high school.